Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right, we're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret, all your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is go to esopodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cleus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 135 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Aquaman number 44, Batman number 63, Justice League number 16, Shazam number 2, Teen Titans number 26, Teen Titans Annual number 1, Supergirl season 4 episode 11, Blood Memory, Arrow season 7 episode 11, Past Sins, Black Lightning season 2 episode 11, The Book of Secrets chapter 1, Prodigal Son, and Flash, Season 5, Episode 12, Memorabilia. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. The Funko Pop movie could be the first Marvel and DC crossover on the big screen. I was kind of surprised when I saw they were going to do a Funko Pop movie because I didn't even hear anything about it.
I mean, I didn't know they were making one, but as soon as I saw that, I was like, of course they're making one.
can't have Lego up one on them, huh?
Well, I mean, that's really the Lego movie was so successful that every other toy brand was basically like, what if we did that? It could be good. I have no idea. I have no expectations is not even a good enough description for
this. You know, I'm neither excited or not excited about it, so I'm sure I'll see it when it comes out. It's going to have DC stuff in it. All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. Justice League versus Fatal 5 trailer was released today, and I was excited to see that. I can't remember if we talked about this before or not.
It doesn't seem familiar, but I'm sure there probably is a podcast of us talking about it. But I will admit, I do not remember it either.
I don't remember it either, but I was excited to see Bruce Timm was behind it. And when I saw the trailer, I was excited to see Jessica Cruz in it.
Yeah, that was, I mean, really, just everything about it. There's some very deep cuts going on in this movie.
Yeah. And I'm excited about it coming out. And I believe they said it had a release date of August. August something. I'm bad. I didn't write that down in my notes. I'm sure we'll talk about it then. Before then. At some point. All right. Up next for DC News. We got a Birds of Prey teaser. And boy, did I think that was weird.
I think that's a good way to describe it. Yeah.
I don't have much more to say about it than that.
I'm curious to see what this movie is going to be. I honestly appreciate that it's a different creative group behind this than on what was on Suicide Squad, but I still can't help but feel like it's going to be heavily influenced by that movie, which I don't really think is a movie you should be inspired by. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
So we'll see. It could be good. I mean, like, I have nothing good but good things to say about Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, but I don't know. I hope it's good. That's all I can say. I hope it's good.
Me too. All right. Up next for DC News, we have some more DC films that were announced for 2021. We have DC Super Pets announced for May 21st, 2020, which I was surprised. I didn't know they had a DC Super Pets in the works. We also got The Batman coming June 25th, 2021.
Sure we are.
And we're getting the Suicide Squad on August 6, 2021.
See, now that one I actually think will probably come out that year. I believe that. I think at some point we'll get that Batman movie, but I mean, I don't know. I will. There's been so much going on with that Batman film at this point that I honestly won't believe that it's actually getting made and happening until they are done filming it.
Well, they haven't announced any casting yet, so maybe
That's
if we
what.
start seeing some casting announcements, we can.
Even then, though, I mean, I really like. You know what I mean? Like, I really just don't believe that it's gonna happen until they're not just starting filming, but they have finished filming. Then I'll be like, okay, this movie's actually gonna come out.
Or maybe after you see some a trailer for it, maybe.
Yeah.
All right, up next for DC News, Why the Last Man gets series order from FX. A pilot has already been filmed, so production on the rest of the show will begin this year, and the goal is for FX to launch this series in 2020.
I think I'm excited. If they do that show similar to what they were doing with Legion, which is a Marvel property, but in my opinion, a phenomenal show. It'd be a really good show. And obviously it's a fantastic source material that they're pulling from, so.
Yeah, I love that series. Even though I didn't exactly like the ending to the series, I did like the rest of the series. Have you ever read Why the Last Man?
I will admit I've never finished Why Last. I've read some of it, but I don't think I had access to it, and then I never got around to attempting to get the remaining access that I needed.
Well, I can tell you have access to it. So, don't worry, I'll hook you up, my friend. All right, up next for DC News, we got some casting news for Batwoman. Okay, here we go with the butchering of names. First, we have Kamaris Johnson, who will play Luke Fox, the son of Wayne Enterprises R&D director Lucius Fox. As the younger Fox, Johnson will reportedly keep Wayne Tower secure in Bruce Wayne's absence. Then we have Megan Tandy, who will be playing Kate Kane's one-time military colleague and lover, Sophie Moore, who is now a high-level private security agent. And then the final casting news was Nicole Kang, will be playing Kate Kane's stepsister, Mary Hamilton. And this character is described as excitable, talkative, and an influencer in the making, and it's supposed to be Kane's polar opposite. So that's some tidbits of characters we should be seeing on the show.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, especially the first guy. I'm assuming we'll get to see him. I'm assuming he won't be Batwing initially, but don't you feel like that'll happen at some point? They're
Yes. As
really
soon as
good. They don't. If they introduce a character like that, they follow through.
I saw his name announced, I was like, ooh, Batwing's gonna be coming at some point. Just kind of like what they did with Mr. Terrific on
Exactly.
Arrow. They introduced him several seasons before they actually brought him on as Mr. Terrific. And I have a feeling that's what they're planning on doing with Luke Fox.
I hope so.
All right, and for our last bit of DC news, Supergirl, Arrow, Flash, Black Lightning, and Legends of Tomorrow have all been renewed for another season. Very excited about that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, not the really, we kind of talked about this when we were texting about this. The only thing that's even a little bit surprising about this was that we both were wondering if next season might be the last season of Arrow, but it doesn't look like it will be, which is not a bad thing. So, I mean, like I'm down for as much Arrow as we can get. So that was really the only thing that I thought might happen was that they'd announce that it was the last one. But yeah, other than that, no surprise whatsoever that they all got renewed.
Yeah, and I'm guessing Crisis on Infinite Earths is going to answer some questions about the future of Arrow next year. Don't you think?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, and part of me is wondering if we're gonna. We've talked about this from time to time. I'm not sure that want we the with the flash forwards that we're getting on Arrow, it suggests a very bad ending in terms of the present story for Arrow. And I don't know how satisfying that would be. You know what I mean? Like we've I part of me wonders if Oliver will die, but the show will continue. And I don't know that I want to watch that show. And I
I've
don't know
been.
that I want to watch a show that has ultimately has a, a bad ending. Like if you commit, when you commit like 8 years of your life to a show, you want some sort of reward. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't want him to kill off the main character. But do you. We haven't seen much of her yet, but do you think Amiko Queen could carry the show after Oliver?
I think she could. I don't know that she should, though. She's a good character. I am thrilled that they've included her, and I love what they're doing with her on the show. But it's still, I don't know. It's still Green Arrow, and it's still to me, it's about Oliver and taking Stephen Amell off the show. I think is really, I just don't think it's the same show anymore. I would
Yeah.
rather it be. I would rather have them just spin it off into a new show with Amiko as the lead than continue on with Arrow, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you mean change the name?
Yeah, just some, just make it,
Make it something different.
just make it something different. You know, like establish that the show is no longer about Oliver Queen Green Arrow. Make it, this is a new show. This one's about Amiko, and that's fine.
They could even change the name to Team Arrow or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, you don't like that, but it wouldn't bother me. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
We are the Metal Geeks Podcast, and on this show, we have heavy metal, comic books, video games, movies, theme parks, and more.
Wait, wait, wait. Comics?
Yep.
And movies?
Exactly.
Video games?
Yeah.
Metal?
Of course.
How does theme parks fit in this?
It just does. All of us Metal Geeks can be found at metalgeeks.net.
At Metal Geeks for Twitter.
Metal Geeks on Instagram.
And Metal Geeks on the Facey Space. You can also find us on iTunes. Subscribe today.
Metal Geeks.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, before we get into this week's comic books talk, I got to bring up something from last week. And I don't think you realized it, Cletus, but there was three comic books we left off of comic books talk last week. And that
I can't I am pretty sure that I commented that I couldn't believe we got through it as fast as we did.
the episode actually went like an hour and 15 minutes, so
Huh.
but I think we spent a lot of time talking about CW shows. I'm going to apologize to our audience. We left off Superman number 7, Titans number 33, and Wonder Woman number 62. And Superman number 7 was The Return of John. And I think we'll talk about that when we talk about Superman 8. So we'll combine those next time. Titans number 33, we'll probably combine that with Titans number 34. And then Wonder Woman was the Wonder Woman 62 wrapped up that story arc. So we'll catch up on those some other time. So I apologize on missing those. I forgot to stick them in my notes, and when I got to the end of Supergirl last week, I wrapped it up. yeah, I was surprised you didn't catch it, Cletus.
I swear I was like, that seemed fast, but okay.
We'll try not to do that again.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into our first issue for this week, Aquaman number 44. All right, so Andy, or I mean Aquaman, is trying to seek answers from Wee on who he is. He's told to come to the shore at sunset, which he does, and he finds the village people out there dancing around a fire, showing their true natures, basically. Apparently, they're some sort of sea gods. Did you find that whole scene weird?
It was pretty cool. It was kind of nice, kind of. These are all sort of outcast former sea gods, something, you know, probably serving some sort of punishment. So, yeah, it was nice having the veil pulled back a little bit, although, yes, it was weird.
Yeah, I was wondering where they all came from and stuff like that. It's kind of still kind of a mystery, and I'm hoping we find out more about that. I don't think the comic has done a very good job of showing Aquaman's fear of the water, because they were talking about his fear of the water, and then we see him, we see the sea god shove his head underwater, which he discovers he can breathe.
Was that really all that was going on in that scene, though? I felt like there was something else happening there.
That's the only thing I figured out when I read it.
That didn't seem to be the thing that he realized. It seemed like there was some, because he was getting some sort of power was getting absorbed into him.
Do you think that has to do with him touching the water?
Yes, I do. Because they were saying that they're preparing him as a champion for the ocean. And I don't know. I really don't think that all that was, hey, by the way, you can breathe underwater. I don't know for a fact, but I'm confident enough to say that there's something more than that.
Okay. This is still pretty shrouded in mystery, so I'm guessing we'll learn a lot more in the next issue. Another thing I thought was weird in this issue was we saw Mira's looking for a husband, and they didn't really explain why all of a sudden there was an urgency for her to have a husband.
Yeah, that does seem fast. I mean, it's a storyline I can definitely believe, but I almost wondered if we missed a passage of time there.
That's possible. I mean, we just started reading Aquaman, or reviewing it again, so there could have been something we missed, and maybe it'll get fleshed out more in the next issue also. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Batman number 63. All right, Cletus, what the hell is going on? Batman is in some sort of dreamland? I don't know. This time we see John Constantine kind of following him all through the issue, offering advice. And I got the sense that John Constantine was represented a part of Bruce's mind that was trying to help him escape. What's your thoughts on that?
I agree completely. It felt like one of those... You know, they frequently have things with Batman like, oh, I trained my brain specifically for this event to do this sort of thing. I mean, it definitely happened a lot in Grant Morrison's run. I don't know if King is going specifically down that ridiculous route, but it did feel like it was at least on some level some subconscious part of Batman trying to save himself and not really being able to do it.
Right. Now, at the end of the issue, John tells Batman that they have him strapped to some machine using scarecrow gas to induce these dreams. Do you think that's true? Do you think that's his subconscious telling him what's going on?
I do. I think that is accurate. I mean, because really in both of these issues, you see one thing I actually really like about both. They're great issues, first off, but you're getting detective work going on in that. Like Batman is trying to solve what's going on, even though he's unconscious. I don't know. I think it's kind of cool. So I do think that that's what's going on.
It is kind of cool. The other thing I liked was John Constantine referenced the last issue, asking Bruce about Professor Big Pig being Damian and kind of letting us know for sure it was a dream. The other thing I thought was interesting in this issue, seeing the different scenarios of Catwoman in Bruce's life. We saw the wedding happen, we see a beach scene, a rooftop scene, a shower scene, a grandfather clock scene, which I thought I could actually see that scene in the real world of Selina talking about why he doesn't change his secret entrance. So I really like this issue a lot.
Yeah, I totally agree. These last two issues have been really cool.
And hopefully we get out of this dream phase soon, because I want to know what's going on. I still want to know about the Thomas Wayne.
Yeah, me too.
All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Justice League number 16. So the story starts off on Multus, which we know is the home planet of the Guardians, with Corona gathering all the evidence about Petua that they would suppress, study, understand, and prepare for. Because they're keeping a secret so she will never return. And we see that she has some sort of army made of human-Martian hybrid that the Guardians fear. All interesting. I wish we'd explore that just a little more.
I'm sure we will. I'm sure we're going to get more. Part of it, didn't it almost seem like the white Martians were the hybrid? Didn't that seem to be the suggestion to you?
Yeah, it did. That's exactly what I was wondering. And I'm hoping they explain that more soon.
But yes, no, it was very cool. It was very cool getting some answers, even though obviously still a lot of questions, as is the norm for this comic. But that's the nice thing, is that they have been giving some answers. It's not just this permanent state of frustration of like, okay, now what's going on?
Yes, and I'm really enjoying this. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, Starman seems to be all-powerful, and he kind of reminded me of Dr. Manhattan. We see him, he was able to fix the Kendra Shiera thing. We found out that Hawk Girl has a bigger destiny, and that she and Starman are going to fix the Source Wall. Which I, you know, as powerful as Starman is, I'm wondering what Hawk Girl's connection is to it. That seemed to be interesting.
I also don't think that's going to work out. Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like this is relatively par for the course for Starman. I mean, it might be a step up a little bit, but he's always been, you know, exceedingly powerful. His big thing in the comics that I've read have always been like a mental state was really what was holding him back, not his powers.
So, but yeah, this issue of Justice League, it's given us some answers and it's moving the story forward. Then I'm happy to see that.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Shazam number 2. Man, I really like the idea of the seven magic lands and the subway hub at the Rock of Eternity. We see the kids decide to go to Funland. No big surprise there.
Of course.
And this interesting character named Kid King shows up at the end of the issue, stating that he's the ruler of the Funlands and he's the missing champion of the Shazam family. My big question is Kid King a hero or a villain?
Villain. There's no doubt. Like, as soon as I was like, that, he's not a good guy.
I got the same vibe you did. I got the Black Adam kind of vibe from him. You know, not the same type of character, but that he was the villain of the Shazam family.
Yeah. I don't know. I would be almost surprised if he was even going to stick around for a particularly long time, to be honest with you. I think he'll be in this arc, and then, I don't know, I could be wrong. I feel like he'll be this arc, a villain within this arc, and that will be about it.
Yeah, we'll see.
Because the reason I say that, the big thing that we got in this issue is in the previous run, the setup of this version of Shazam and the Shazam family was that Geoff Johns, Gary Frank trade. And in that, Savannah was mainly the villain, and then it kind of passed the baton on to Black Adam about halfway through. And here we have that same Savannah kind of going through, but we learn that he's being controlled by Mr. Mind, so he's back. That was probably the most exciting part of the comic for me.
That was really interesting. And why is he having him steal some doctor's tongue? It's like, okay, what's going on here? And Dr. Savannah's eye is doing some weird magic thing.
That's from that trade.
Okay, I really need to read this trade. I know I'm still working on Multiversity, but as soon as I get that done, I think I'm going to have to read the Shazam miniseries, whatever it is, next.
You really should. I mean, I really like it, but also it's going to make this help make more sense of, like, you're gonna have a better idea of what's going on within these first couple issues, I think.
Okay, so it would be a good thing for our audience to go read also.
If Shazam is a character that you enjoy or you're looking forward to the movie, and maybe you've checked out this series, or if it's something you're considering checking out this series, I would go read that trade first. Because if you enjoyed that trade, this series is more of the same. If you didn't enjoy that trade, I will say that this version of Billy is more what some people were looking for. So even then, I would consider looking at the series if you read the trade. I really like that trade that they were originally backups in Justice League when Johns was writing that. I was a huge fan of it, and I've really enjoyed these first two issues of this. So they've got my personal recommendation for them.
All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Teen Titans number 26. So it's been a little bit since we've talked Teen Titans. There's a whole new team dynamic here with Damian leading the team. We got Lobo's daughter, Kid Flash. We've got, who else is on the team? The Magic
Jin.
Yeah, the magic girl Jin, who seems to be an interesting character. And then that goofy kid. I can't remember his name either. But this issue was interesting because they break into the Batcave. And I thought it was pretty funny when they think it's Batman showing up and it's actually a robot. And I do like the interaction between Damian and Alfred.
I don't know. I was not a huge fan of the route that they're going with Damian in this. I mean, to me, Damian is prickly, but he's not... I mean, this version of Damian to me is bordering on villainous. And I don't know. That's never really how that character has struck me, is when he's being used best.
Yeah, I'm hoping they bring him back around, though.
And I don't think it's intentional. I don't think they're intentionally trying to make him seem like a villain, but he's just, I mean, they've taken that prickliness part of his character and merely just focused almost entirely on that, so that he's almost just like psychopathic in the way that he treats everybody and the way he's going about stuff. I don't know. It's not usually how he's portrayed. Like, I mean, this is a guy that does care about people and does care about things. And the story that we get in here and then in the annual after that just suggests a guy who doesn't really have any sense of empathy or anything.
That is true. I do like Tomasi's version of Damian a lot better.
Well, I mean, in the original run that he's in too with Morrison, both of those writers, yes, I mean, he's a jerk, obviously. I'm not going to disagree with that, but both of them had their own ways of showing that underneath that very rough exterior, there was a kid that truly did care about people and truly did want to be a good person and do the right thing. And they showed that in different ways. And to me, the character that we got in this issue and in the annual shows none of that. It shows just a completely heartless person with no empathy.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I have not read Morrison's run, which I've been wanting to go back and check out, just haven't had time. Since you've already brought it up, let's talk about Teen Titans Annual Number 1. In that one, we see him battling Jason Todd. And he does seem to be the antagonist in that and not Jason.
I didn't get the whole point. So basically the entire issue that we were talking about before this, the whole setup essentially was Damian getting this box. Do you know what that box was?
No.
Were we supposed to know?
He got the box in issue number 26 and... It was in the annual, but they never revealed what it was. I don't know if they're going to reveal it, because Jason's he's in possession of that box now. Is he going to be using it in his own title?
That's what I didn't understand. I was like, what was the point of that? I mean, it was such a huge setup, and then there was like, that was the big cliffhanger off of the end of that, is we're going to use this to take down Jason Todd. And then I was shocked that they just rolled right into it with the annual. But then they wrapped it right up, too. I was like, what? That was anticlimactic. I don't know. It really was kind of a letdown, to be honest with you. It was like, oh, that was not a lot.
Yeah. So was this Jason Todd, Damian Wayne feud over? Or is it going to continue on in the next Titans issue?
I'm sure it will continue on some level, but it felt like they kind of resolved that mini story. And it was like, well, what? That was weird. It was weird that that was ultimately the entire issue was setting up this story in the annual, and then it was just a small fight, and it was over.
Yeah. One of the things in the annual that got me interested was Jin's character. She seemed kind of weird in that story arc in this issue.
There definitely seems to be a rather dark side of her that she is hiding.
Yeah, she's very much like a Raven type character. But she's...
One interesting thing too, speaking of her, is that there seemed to be a suggestion that it doesn't seem like the Titans know who. Correct me if I'm wrong. Are the Titans aware that Damian is Bruce Wayne's son?
I don't know.
I got the feeling that they didn't know, but it felt like I could be wrong about that. I think they're probably aware that he's Batman's son, but I don't know that they know who Batman is.
Yeah, I got the. It seemed like they didn't have any indication of that, and.
But it seemed like Jin figured it out because she seemed like she was following him.
She has some sort of obsession with him, and Lobo's daughter seemed to have a problem with that.
Yeah, oh yeah, when we're going back to the annual, we see that, and that seems to upset her. That, I will admit, having not followed the series, I don't know. I'm sure that was something that was set up, but it meant nothing to me. I was like, oh,
yeah,
I guess she's really into her. Okay.
So, yeah, we don't know much about what's going on there, but I had been reading Teen Titans, and I dropped it, and then I decided to pick it back up again. I don't know if we'll keep reviewing it that much on this, but I might be still reading it. I don't know. We'll see what happens in the future. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
This week on Myopia Defend Your Childhood. Myopia Defend Your Childhood is so named because I believe we are short-sighted on the things we watched as kids. So every week we watch a movie that one of the panelists grew up watching and see if they hold up, from comedy to cartoons or to action. And for this season, the last Thursday of each month, we're doing a TV show in our Myopia Mornings segments. We watch Saturday morning cartoons and afternoon classics. So find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. How will you stand when we put your past on trial? Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 4, Episode 11, Blood Memory. So, we see in this episode Supergirl struggling with Alex's change in personalities due to her memory wipe and about Kara being Supergirl. And Alex is acting differently towards Supergirl and aliens in general. What'd you think of that?
I think it makes sense. I mean, it was what we kind of talked about, what we thought the repercussions would be, in that unlike the other characters who got their minds wiped of Supergirl's identity, that wasn't, I mean, it was knowledge that they had, but it wasn't really a part of their life. Whereas Alex, I mean, they basically wiped away half of her life. I mean, knowing that Kara is Supergirl is just intrinsically tied to her entire life, basically. And now that's been wiped away. So, it's no surprise that this has completely changed her.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if we see something with the Agents of Liberty. The Agents of Liberty.
You mean her being recruited as one?
I wouldn't be. I could see her. I don't know. It felt like this. I wasn't expecting that, but then watching this episode, part of me I was like, I could see her start to side more with her boss. And don't you feel like that's just, something's not quite right.
Yeah, something is definitely not quite right. And I got the feeling she was going to be an antagonist for Supergirl and friends with Kara. It felt like that's what the road they were going down was. I didn't think about her becoming part of the Agents of Liberty or anything like that.
I'm not saying that she's going to become murderous or villainous or anything, and I don't think that they would go fully commit to it. I could see her start to kind of fall in line and become sympathetic to a certain extent with that, and that being kind of, at some point I could see that being a line where Kara has to finally step in and be like, I can't watch you go down this path anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that happening too. With the Soviet Supergirl coming down the line, I'm guessing the United States is to declare Supergirl an enemy of the state at some point. I just see that happening.
Oh, yeah. I completely agree.
All right. Well, let's talk about Nia Null, because most of this episode focuses on her and Kara. So Kara accompanies Nia Null back to her hometown, where Nia is afraid to tell her sister and her mother about her dream powers. And we found out why. The dream powers are supposed to be passed from mother to daughter, and they always assumed it was going to be going to Nia's sister. I thought that whole interaction of her going home and dealing with that was all interesting. Nia reveals her secret about being transgender to Kara, and giving away her secret, Kara ends up revealing her identity of being Supergirl to Nia, because both of them are having sister issues, both have powers, and both are aliens, and they're starting to bond a stronger friendship.
I really liked the scene where Supergirl reveals, obviously it's at the end of the episode, where she reveals her identity to Nia, because it felt like one of the most natural scenes that we've gotten in any of the CW shows. There have been other scenes that have made sense, but this one, like, you could really feel Supergirl's getting so frustrated because she had just had a scene where Alex is ripping into her as Supergirl. You know, of course you don't understand. You don't, obviously not knowing Supergirl's side, and there's nothing Supergirl can say to clarify that, right? She just has to sit there and take it. And then she gets the exact same thing. I think dang near the same phrase from Nia, like, you can't possibly understand this. And finally she's just like, no, you know what? No. I do understand. I don't know. I love that, because it was like, yes, this is, I could totally see her being like, you know what? Screw this. I am Supergirl. I'm so frustrated right now, and I'm not going to just sit here and listen to this after listening to it from my sister, who I can't tell. I don't know. I thought that was very, like, real. It just, I don't know. It was one of the most natural scenes to me in terms of revealing their identity.
Yes, and it makes perfect sense. And, you know, with Kara not being able to rely on Alex for knowing her Supergirl identity and relaying her relaying her feelings about that like she normally would, now she has Nia to turn to.
Yeah, I'm excited. And they had that. We've gotten the picture of her, the promo picture of her in costume. We got to see a tease of that in the episode. I'm excited to see her suit up and fight alongside Kara.
I am too. All right. One of the other things we see in this episode is the Russian Kara releases some sort of energy, and we see them affect these pills. I called them Hulk pills, because whenever somebody took them, they became filled with rage and became super strong. Do you think we're going to see any more of this, or was this just a one-time thing?
I'm pretty sure it's going to be a one-time thing, because there was a limited supply of it, right? It wasn't something that was created. It was these pills that got irradiated. So I don't. Right. I'd be surprised.
I'm curious about why the Russian Kara released energy like that.
I thought that was weird too.
I wonder if that's going to factor in later at some point.
I would think so. I would agree. I mean, that's kind of what I think.
All right. The last thing I want to talk about in this episode was James Olsen burying the story about LexCorp finances to cover for Lena. That seemed kind of villainous.
There's no way that doesn't come back and resurface, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's definitely going to pop back up.
Yeah, that's my feeling on that too. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Arrow, Season 7, Episode 11, Past Sins. I was glad to see this episode refocus back on Oliver as a main character. We see that he is dealing with the fallout of actions of his father and trying to reconnect with his half-sister, Amiko.
I agree. I mean, I don't know how many times we say it when we're talking about Arrow, but the show is always at its best when it's focusing on Oliver, which goes back to what we were talking about during the DC news. I just can't imagine taking Oliver completely out of the show. I mean, it just, all evidence shows that the episode is the show tends to be weak when he is not the main character. And so, yeah.
You know how I not this season, but past seasons, I always said Flash has been my favorite show. Flash has not been as good this year. And Arrow has been really good.
I agree. Because Arrow did what we've been asking these CW shows to do, which is split up the season, make separate arcs for things. And they did that, and it's done wonders for the show. It's been so good, I think, in large part because of that. They've also taken a ton of creative risks, I think, with the show, doing different things that they haven't done before. Yeah, Arrow has been very, very good, in my opinion, this season. And I know I mentioned it last podcast, but like, I kind of wish we had gotten the showrunner earlier. She's been good. I have to give her credit where credit's due. She took over the show, and she has delivered.
Yes, she has. We also see in this episode, Diggle and Lila bring Curtis into the loop about the Ghost Initiative. And I like how Curtis started to say, call it the Suicide Squad, but they cut him off like it was taboo.
One thing I wanted to say about this Suicide Squad, though, is that this is a pretty good lineup, right? Like, I was like, yeah, this is much better than the kind of lame lineup that we've gotten before.
Yeah, it really is. And I have to tell you, that scene where Diaz thinks Curtis disabled the bomb and frees him, man, that was great. The whole time, I knew it was some sort of setup. I was waiting for them to go, ha-ha, we got you, to Diaz. But when he broke Curtis's neck, I was like, what's going on here? Where's the trick at? I was waiting the whole time. I did not. They did fool me into thinking what was really happening was really happening, because I was waiting for them to, for John to show up or somebody to show up and go, aha, you gave us the information. But when they broke Curtis's neck, I was like, is this real? and then when we find out it was all in Diaz's head, I was like, oh, okay, that was the trick. But they let it go on for quite a while, even though I was expecting it. And they ended up fooling me a little bit, because I did not think it was in Diaz's head. I was just waiting for somebody to jump out and say, hi, yeah, you gave us the information. You know what I mean? So
yeah, it was great.
It was a nice twist. The other thing I really interested about this episode is the person that is stalking Laurel. We see the story where she believes the person she killed on Earth 2 is back for revenge. And then it just ends up being a coincidence of the Earth 1 doppelganger. And we think the story is over, but then when Dinah goes to her car and finds a note on it, I was like, whoa, so that wasn't even the stalker.
Yeah, I'm curious where they're going to go with this. I will admit, we're recording this. I've seen the next episode. Is unclear, I would say, whether that's the stalker or not, the villain in the next episode. It could be, but they didn't explicitly state that, so I kind of think it's not. I think that threat is still out there.
All right. I have not watched the next episode of Arrow yet, so I'll be interested in seeing. And I'm sure we'll have a nice discussion on it next time. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Black Lightning, Season 2, Episode 11, The Book of Secrets, Chapter 1, Prodigal Son. So, we get the fallout of last week's Tobias ripping Khalil's medical spine out of his body and then leaving him there in front of the church. We had a long discussion about this last week.
We did.
And I think the reason the show did that is so that when they had this episode, they could wrap up the Khalil story.
That makes sense. And he does ultimately pass away, but it's still... I have to admit, though, it was still unclear to me, because at one point they have a line in there saying we may not be able to admit Khalil's testimony. And I was like, why? I legitimately don't understand why. Maybe legally that's true, but I do not understand why on earth that would be the case.
I don't know. I don't know if they have enough charges to bring on Tobias or enough. You know what I mean?
But they may not have a good case. It was enough to take him away in a police escort to get him safe. And then he gets his spine ripped out, and now all of a sudden it's not enough? That's what I'm saying. It was enough at one point, and now it's not. And I don't understand what happened to cause that.
My guess is there's no live testimony. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that I mean, because that, you have
you have to convince a jury. They have to have enough evidence to convince the jury beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
And without having a live person there, you know, they might have more difficult convincing a jury. The other thing is, do they have enough to arrest Tobias on right now?
They clearly don't.
Or was he would he just get away? I thought the scene where Detective Henderson goes to Tobias's place was very interesting.
Yeah.
The other thing I liked about this episode is Jefferson taking Detective Henderson to their secret lair in the Taylor store. I thought that was so freaking cool. I loved Henderson's reaction to it. And I love that they're becoming more of a partnership.
I agree.
You know, it's similar to Batman Commissioner Gordon, but it's different in the fact that Detective Henderson knows Jefferson's secret identity. Not saying that Commissioner Gordon hasn't figured it out by now and just doesn't say anything, but this does seem to be a little different. Yeah. Friendship.
Yeah, I agree. What is different? I mean, these are lifelong friends, whereas Batman and Commissioner Gordon just have a mutual respect for each other, right? Like, it is a completely different level of partnership.
That is true.
It's a lot more along the lines of, like, Bruce and Alfred, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In terms of, like, Bond.
Yes, it is.
One thing that was surprising to me was the death of the pastor. It was very sudden, and it was right at the beginning of the episode too. Like, I know they had been threatening his death, but then they were like, oh yeah, he's dead now.
Yeah, Tobias just decided to take him out once in a while. They poisoned him, I think, if I remember right.
I actually really like that. I like that they kind of followed through, that Tobias didn't just decide randomly, well, I guess, I mean, I tried, but whatever. I like that he followed through. It's like, no, I want this guy dead. And so they get it done. I was surprised at the lack of fanfare. I mean, they really did a lot with the setup in terms of whether or not Khalil would kill him. And then the next, like, you know, what, three episodes later, oh, yeah, by the way, he's dead now.
I think that's because I think, you know, Tobias still wanted him dead. Khalil failed at it. Then we had the whole, they got away from it because Khalil ran away, and they had to deal with that. Now they're getting to, now that that's taken care of, Tobias is like, all right, it's time to take out this pastor.
Oh, I understand the timing. I get why he dies at that point. And like I said, I like it from that perspective. I like that Tobias follows through it. I'm talking about in terms of the show. That's a character that was fairly well established that they then kind of almost unceremoniously killed off. That's what I'm talking about. I get plot-wise why it happens at that point. That makes 100% sense. I totally get that. But from a running a show, I was just surprised that this is a guy that has been a fairly big character in terms of supporting character on the show, and then he just died. It was almost like when we thought they had killed Gambi, it was like, wait, what?
That just goes to show you nobody is safe.
Right. No, again, it was more the fact that they... Again, not the fact that he died, but the manner in which, so he dies and then they just drop it. They don't really talk about the pastor again. He's dead, he's dead, and that's just sort of it.
Yeah,
they just sort of move on.
Unless they're going to, you know, have a funeral or something for him in the next episode. Because, you know, they could have gone off on this tangent, and then the story would have been less focused if they would have spent more time on it. You know what I mean?
That's true. I can tell you they don't. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I haven't watched it.
Does not do that either. So, yeah, it's not really a complaint. Again, it's really more of I'm surprised that, to me, the pastor was a big enough character on the show that, to be fair, though, I feel like they have done that before because they killed off, I can't even remember his name now, but the secondary villain in season one, they killed him, and then they brought him back, and then they killed him again. Really kind of randomly.
Yeah. And
you remember that?
Yeah.
His second death. his first death I thought made sense. I was like, yeah, there was a good arc with that. And then his second death, I think both you and I were like, is he really dead? Is that really it?
Yeah, I've always expected him to pop back up at some point, but he hasn't.
That still is really weird to me. They spent so much time setting that character's return back up, and then they just ended it. That was odd. The show have a history of just sort of killing a character unceremoniously and moving on to something else.
Yeah. Unless he didn't want to renew his contract or something. Who knows?
Possible. Yeah.
But, man, this was a great episode, and I think it was a good send-off for Khalil. Wrapping up his story.
Yeah, I thought that they really allowed that actor his time to kind of shine and really have a nice exit from the show.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Flash, Season 5, Episode 12, Memorabilia. So, last episode, Barry decides the best way to catch Cicada is by waking up Grace. So, we see Sherlock bring in his memory machine that he built, a device he used to catch the Mad Hatter on Earth 221. I thought that was pretty funny. And it was going to allow Barry and Nora to enter Grace's mind, find her consciousness, and lead her out of her coma. But Nora is afraid her parents will discover her secret and goes in after Grace by herself and becomes trapped. What were your thoughts on this episode?
It's getting to the point where it feels like other characters should be noticing what's going on with Nora besides Sherlock. Don't you think? I felt like by the end of this episode, somebody else should be suspicious besides him, and it still doesn't feel like we're quite there yet.
Maybe. I think maybe the reason why they haven't is they're preoccupied. You got Sisko, who's working on his metahuman cure, and Caitlin and Killer Frost, who are kind of helping him. And Ralph, I don't know, Ralph's been kind of doing his own thing.
I'm not going to lie. I actually thought Ralph would be the one that I would notice next. I actually kind of thought that Ralph would, as the other detective, would notice. And then he'd be in the awkward position of, I think, much more like it's easy for Sherlock to be suspicious and to investigate because he has no ties to these guys. But for Ralph, that would be, I think, a really interesting thing for his character because, like, how do you tell your friend that you think his daughter might be working with somebody bad? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I really want them to focus more on the mystery of Reverse Flash, but the show's not. They're still messing around with Cicada. But I thought what was interesting in this was that Cicada's daughter, Grace, she has some sort of vendetta against Barry and his daughter, too.
I thought the show made it very clear that the resurfacing. So one thing, interesting thing we get when Barry and Iris are exploring Nora's memories, they get this memory seeing that Cicada resurfaces after Barry disappears. And this show, I thought, made it fairly clear that Cicada resurfacing is actually the daughter, right?
Oh, I did not get that. But that makes total sense.
I could be wrong because they didn't explicitly state it, but it seemed like the show was very, very strongly hinting that she is the second Cicada. That Cicada isn't the same. The guy that comes back is not the same guy. That it's her. And I thought that there was a little bit of a right when they're escaping. I thought that there was a little bit of a hint that Nora, at minimum, should have caught, and it didn't feel like she did catch that. And that surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, she didn't. That makes total sense.
You know what I mean? Right at the end, all of a sudden, Cicada is a girl. It's a woman with blonde it's no longer the Cicada we've been seeing on the show. Right at the very end, right as they're escaping, Cicada is a woman, a grown woman with long hair.
Okay, see, I didn't catch that either. That is very interesting.
And I was surprised that I don't know that Barry and Iris saw it, but I thought Nora, having experienced everything that was going on with the daughter and then seeing that, I was expecting her to be like, guys, I think I figured something out. And then she didn't. I'm sure she will figure that out, and we will see that in a couple episodes, though.
Okay. This episode finally explains something. They've never been really clear on the reason why Nora came back. But this episode specifically stated that Nora came back to defeat Cicada.
That seems like they changed that, though, right? Like,
yes, I agree with you. It does feel like they changed it, because it did not feel like that at first.
Well, also because her going back changes who Cicada was in the first place. Like, her going back in time is what makes it so much harder than it would have been to begin with. That's why I'm a little bit, I don't know. I mean, clearly we knew she altered time, but I don't know. Yeah.
I'm wondering how much she's altered time. I wonder if time got altered a lot. And that's something they're going to have as a big reveal later in the series. Or in the season, I mean.
Yeah.
That's what I'm expecting. That's why I'm really interested in what Sherlock finds out about Nora. Because I'm sure he's going to find out.
It's so much more interesting of a mystery. Like, even with this kind of twist that the daughter will become the successor to Cicada, even that, I'm still, even that, very intriguing, was not enough to convince me that we needed a full season of him as a villain.
No, I agree with you there. Now, do you think, because I'm wondering, do you think Sherlock is going to figure out Nora's secret? And she's going to do something to Sherlock to keep him from telling the others. Is she going to do something villainous?
I'm going to say no, because I'm going out on a limb here. This is a wild guess. I think he's going to stumble into Eobard on his own, and Eobard's going to do something.
Ooh. I can see that happening.
I am almost positive that those two are going to meet. And I could see Sherlock going on his own and stumbling into a situation that he should not be in alone.
Yes, that would be very Sherlock to go by himself without telling anybody. That would make for an interesting episode, Sherlock just disappearing and everybody figuring out what happened to Sherlock.
Also seeing Tom Cavanaugh act with himself.
Yeah, that would be funny. And that would give something for Ralph to do too.
Yeah.
You know, Ralph could go in search of Sherlock. Ooh, interesting. Why, you know, Barry and Nora are busy with something else. Yeah, I like that. So, at the end of this episode, Barry declares that he's going to use the metahuman cure on Cicada. Barry, does this not seem very heroic? You know, taking somebody's metahuman abilities against their will?
I mean, but, like, is... In theory, but in practice, specifically for Cicada, I think that's okay. I don't really see the moral quandary there.
All right. My question is it actually going to work? We know he's using Meditech.
I think so, because they've been pretty clear that he is also has become mutated himself, that it's not just the knife.
Okay. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
All right, my shout-out is going to be a little a bit of a kind of, I don't know, out of left field to me, at least. This conclusion that we got in the Justice League story was dealing with Thanagar and Hot Girl and Hawk Woman. And I was trying to think, it reminded me of, and I feel like I may have recommended this before, but it was really good. It was one of the very first comic series that I bought on my own. It was somewhat random just because it was something that was coming out at the time and it had Green Lantern in it. But the Rand Thanagar War, which was a mini series leading up to Infinite Crisis, is about the Rand, which is the planet that Adam Strange is from, is brought into the same orbit as Thanagar, and the two worlds are at war, and there's, you know, this immigration crisis and a lot of stuff is going on, and Onimar Sin is the Bane villain in that, who's the guy who was in control of Thanagar Prime during Dark Knight's Metal that we read, and then the aftermath of that disaster is what we're seeing now in Justice League. And there's a lot of characters that were in that popped up in that storyline. It's really cool. Obviously it is a lead in to Crisis on Infinite Earth. I'm sorry, Infinite Crisis. But it was really good. It's a Hawk Girl, Hawkman, Kyle Rayner, Adam Strange story. really cool, just kind of DC space story.
All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about the ESO Network Riffs Episode 1. Coming up this Saturday, the ESO Network is going to be doing Riff on the Batman 1989 movie with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. I'm very excited about being on that episode. It's going to be on the ESO Patreon, so you have to be a member to listen to it on there. I'm excited because I'm going to be on that episode watching that, and I love that Batman movie. It came out when I was a freshman in high school, and it was like the first Batman movie since the old 60s series. So I'm kind of excited to watch that with the ESO Network. And all right, well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach our feedback line at 317-564-9133, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we'll be talking Action Comics, Batgirl, Detective Comics, Hero in Crisis, Justice League Odyssey, Flash, Terrifics, Wonder Woman. We have a Justice League annual and a Flash annual. Lots of stuff coming up next week, plus all the CW shows. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.